We are joined right now by a Yahoo Sports national columnist. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He is co-host of the College Football Inquirer podcast. He is Dan Wetzel. He joins us via Zoom. Dan, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Good, dude. You look great. It's great to have you on. Thanks for making time. Listen, before we get into what it all means, can I first get your reaction to the news that the PGA and LIV Tours, after hating each other's guts for over a year and a half, have decided to lay down in bed together and merge? What was your initial reaction when you saw that?
I think, like everyone else, was, you know, stunned, particularly because it happened right now. I thought, look, you get into a business fight, basically a hostile takeover, and prolonged legal battle with anyone who has more resources, considerably more resources, you're going to lose generally. Long term, they can just lean on you. It's like a poker game when you've got all the chips and the other guy doesn't. So I kind of always felt, as much as the LIV product was inferior, people really weren't going for it, it wasn't exciting, no one wanted it. As long as the Saudis didn't lose interest in this fight, they would be able to just spend as much as they wanted. It wasn't a fair battle. The PGA has fiscal responsibilities. They have limitations. LIV was part of a $600+ billion fund. And so they could lose as much money as they needed if they're going to win the long term. But that said, to have it happen so quickly and not maybe at the end of the season, at least, in the winter, I think was shocking to everyone.
Talking to Dan Wetzel, when you look at it that way, Dan, and you're right, when you look at those coffers, I mean, $600 bill with a B in that fund. I mean, could you make the point that this is what was going to happen all along? And not only that, LIV knew it and the PGA knew it?
Oh, I think we both knew it. It was just, how long could the PGA hold out? And it was kind of like, if they could hold out for 3, 4, 5 years, you know, do some of the players come back? Does the Saudis give up and just say, this isn't going to work? I don't know. That was kind of it, but they just crumbled so quickly. They just weren't equipped for the fight. And, you know, because I talked to Koepka at the Brooks Koepka at the Masters, and he really said the only reason he joined LIV was because he thought he wasn't going to get healthy again. And so this was his only chance to make a ton of money. He's basically taking advantage of them. And, you know, here's his chance. But now he's healthy and he wants to play. You could almost see the way he's sitting there saying, you know, I really want to get back to competing at the higher level. So there was hope that way, but it was going to be a long shot. You just had so much momentum behind LIV. But the fact is really the way they did it. They never really talked about that as much as they went this scorched earth policy of, you know, LIV is inferior and all of that. But also anybody who dared to do anything with LIV or have anything to do with the Saudis was, you know, their principles were unethical, and, you know, they didn't have morals. They didn't care. They were unpatriotic. They went very, very personal in the attacks against not just LIV, but anyone associated with LIV. And that was the way the PGA waged this battle. And so when you go down that line and you've basically said everybody who has anything to do with LIV, you know, is taking blood money and should be ashamed. And then immediately, all of a sudden, just 15 months in, go, okay, we're going to take the money now. That's a whole different swing on this. I just felt like you wouldn't wage a battle that heated if you were going to crumble so quickly.
Right. So what happened? What changed? Because that was the battle. They did go scorched earth. They made it very clear, we are not about any of this. We are about freedom. We are about human rights. We're against torture. We're against sports washing. We're okay with all that. Where's the money? Like, what changed?
Well, I think they'll tell you that their financial situation was more precarious than they were letting on. They didn't have the money to really operate properly with the increased prize pool and some of the changes they had made, which in hindsight they just should have made originally. That's their original mistake, and then maybe LIV doesn't come along, although maybe it does. Whether that's true or not is hard to say. I mean, obviously, they're going to do everything they can to try to make it like we had no choice. We fought the good fight, but this was inevitable. We had to do it. And that's how they're going to try to defend themselves against the hypocrisy charges. But we don't know that's true. But clearly, at some point along the way here, they decided we're going to lose. Let's just make this deal now. Could they have held out longer? I would have hoped so. But apparently, you know, whatever, they made that choice.
They fight the good fight, or is Monahan, in fact, one of the biggest hypocrites ever?
Well, he's one of the biggest hypocrites ever. I mean, I don't know how you come back from this. If you think you're going to lose, like we were saying, if you think, look, this is inevitable. We got a snowball's chance. You know, we're going to give up in 15 months. You don't sit there last summer and have 9/11 families sending letters to Phil Mickelson and sending letter and protesting outside golf tournaments in the United States. And then use them as a PR prop to gain sympathy and to make points and things like that, and then turn your back so quickly. He talked personally about how he knew families that had lost people at 9/11. I mean, to go that route, to get extremely personal and basically say, if you're playing with Liv, if you have anything to do with these Saudis, you're dishonoring the victims, the families that are left from September 11th. This, you know, one of the worst day, maybe the worst day, certainly in the life I've had in the United States, and one of the worst in our country's history. And then turn. I mean, why are you invoking that? Why are you going down that route if you know you're going to lose? So he will always be hypocritical for that. I mean, even if you are pro-Liv, even if, you know, you're like, hey, look, I don't really care who's funding this thing. There's Chinese money, there's Saudi money, there's this money, it's global. I just want to watch golf. That's fine. Those are your things. Even if you're in favor of that and are glad this happened, you'd have to look and go, God, man, that is some low dog stuff right there to go with. And then to use people like Rory, Tiger, John Rahm, guys that really aren't looking to be in the middle of big disputes. You know, Rory's a pretty reasonably just kind of get along guy, and to use them as the spear of your attacks back, kind of set up this Rory versus Phil war of words, battle, personality conflict. And then so quickly as they're going along with it, not only does Rory lose, but essentially you chose that he lost and you humiliated him. You know, it's like your corner man becoming the judge in a boxing match. And then, you know, scorecard says you lost. He's the deciding one. So to me, Monahan just he set these guys up. He used them. He used the 9/11 families, and then he caved very quickly. I've yet to hear an explanation on why this is acceptable. And I think it's going to be very, very hard for this guy to have any kind of credibility coming from that. And maybe that's just a casualty of a tough business battle, which happens. But man, it's a tough spot to fight back from in terms of public acceptance and player acceptance.
Especially player acceptance. We saw how that went for him yesterday when he got in front of his players in that room and tried to explain why he did what he did. It obviously did not go well for him. And I don't see how any of them could trust anything this guy ever has to say to them ever again. So when you look at it, Dan, who are the big winners in all this and who are the big losers?
Saudi Arabia. I mean, they basically own a sport. I mean, they don't just own a team. They don't just own an event. They own golf. There's a couple events now they don't have control over, but they control all the players that are in it. Ryder Cup, Masters, things like that. But they own it. They bought a sport, and a global sport, and one that's played in many of the most important markets that they want to be in. So undoubtedly, they are huge victors there. Mickelson. You know, he's a winner. His side wins. He's going to go back and he'll always have the bragging rights. You know, it's a little hard to say because you still had to make this jump and take the money. But if we're just looking at it, I mean, I don't know what they paid Dustin Johnson, but you know, there's offers of $200-300 million to go play for a couple of years and live. And then you just come back to the PGA. They're talking, oh, there's going to be some kind of, You can't just accept them back. Well, we'll see. I mean, all those guys that gambled on Liv for the money and said, we don't care, we're going to take Saudi money. They got their money, or at least they got part of it. And they didn't really lose anything. You know, they played less golf, and now they're back in the PGA. They're back in the thing. And at the end of the day, Rory and Spieth and all the rest are going to take Saudi money. So nothing happened. So those guys gambling on it, I would consider to be the winners here too. And then conversely, we're talking a tough loss. So not only do you have the, hey man, I fought a well-meaning principled stand that I wasn't going to sell out, and then you sold me out. There's other guys on that PGA tour are like, man, I stayed with the PGA and turned down $200-$400 million. Tiger might have turned down $700 million to $1 billion. And you gave up this quick. Like, maybe I should have just taken the money. So there's a lot. Even if you get beyond the politics or the personal stance or the personal humiliation, a lot of money that guys could have jumped at and grabbed that they didn't.
And I don't know how you make it right with them. I don't know how you reconcile it with them. I don't know how you make them full, given all the money they left on the table. One last thought, Dan. I thought you made a really, really interesting point when you said, hey, listen, they didn't buy an event or a series of events. They bought an entire sport. They bought an entire sport. What's to stop them from buying another sport?
Well, I don't know. Not much. Yeah. And I don't even know if they bought it. They basically just shifted their stated investment in Liv. They're just going to put it into the PGA. I don't even know if they had to buy anything. They just changed their investment. So it was like, well, we're going to allocate this money, and now we're going to allocate it over here, and we got it all. They have the PGA, they have Liv, and they have the DP World Tour, which is a European tour. So they have pretty much every prominent player under their circuit. I mean, that's kind of the next thing. You sit there and go, well, when will Saudi Arabian interests own a number of Premier League teams. Could they ever own all the teams? Could one come in and buy an NBA team? What is stopping this fund from, say, you know what, the Commanders sold for what, like $6 billion or $7 billion, and there's all this financing concern? What if they just came in and said, it'll pay $15 billion for it, right? Like they have that money, and we own the NFL team in the nation's capital of the United States. Right there, Pentagon, right over there. I mean, the NFL has rules on, they will vote to say who can and can't own a team. But I don't know. Like this, all I know in this world is money usually wins out, and they've got an enormous amount of money, and they're interested in using it to broaden their economic appeal and use it as promotional efforts. So I don't know what stops anything, but right now, golf is owned by the public fund out of Saudi Arabia.
It certainly is. He is a Yahoo Sports national columnist. He is a New York Times bestselling author, co-host also of the College Football Inquirer podcast, joining us via Zoom. Dan, great job. You know, I appreciate you very much, and always good to have you on, Dan. Thanks for making time.
Thanks, Rome. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you, dude, very much. Dan Wetzel, breaking it down. All right. So another perspective for you. He's got to call him up on that as well. You might want to check out, and I'd love to get your reaction to it. Dan Wetzel showing up for us like he does on Zoom, no less. All right, 1-800-636-8686.